This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Fall weather has arrived in Wisconsin, which means it's a great time to break out the heavy-duty pots and make some chili. Chili is a staple of Midwest cooking in the fall, whether it's white chicken chili, a hearty vegetarian version, or an old-fashioned tomato-based chili con carne with or without beans. It's Food Friday, and our guest has traveled the world to study the history of chili, its ancestors and cousins, and the regional varieties around the United States. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your favorite way to eat chili? In a bowl with cornbread? On a hot dog? Plate of nachos? Do you have a tried-and-true recipe you make every year? And I don't think there's a Wisconsin-style chili, but maybe you disagree. What is Wisconsin-style chili? If so, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Rob Walsh is an award-winning food writer and the author of a dozen books about food, including The Chili Cookbook. Rob, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Great to be here, Rob.
Your book is packed with a lot of great recipes, Rob. I love the history, too. Can you talk about the first thing we know about that we would, you know, look at in the modern age and say, yeah, I think that meets the category of chili?
Well, you know, it goes way back before the modern age because we know that Native Americans were stewing venison with chilies, you know, back before in prehistory, before Columbus. So chili's been around forever.
Now, can you talk about how it became so big, what we think of as modern chili in the United States? I know there are arguments about who gets credit for the first modern chili, but what were some of the first big hits?
Well, it's sort of the big game changer in the Midwest was the World's Fair, the Columbia Exposition. 1893, is that? I'm pretty sure.
I think so.
In Chicago. And what had happened was people from all over the country began traveling around on the trains, and tourism really sort of started in the latter part of the 1800s. People went to San Antonio, and they discovered the Chili Queens, these colorful women with stalls in the public markets who were selling what we call Tex-Mex now, what they called Mexican food back then. But chili con carne was really at the heart of it. Enchiladas with chili, tortillas with chili. And so when they held the Columbia Exposition, they invited a chili queen stall, a chili stand from San Antonio, to set up in the midway of the Columbia Exposition. It was the first time Midwesterners got to see chili outside of Texas, and it just caught fire. There was chili being made in St. Louis and all across the Midwest shortly after that. And in fact, the Mexican pavilion at the, I think it was the 1904 St. Louis World's Fair, spawned more chili con carne interest. A guy named William Gebhardt, a German immigrant, in San Antonio, came up with a chili powder that was it was pulverized anchos with a little oregano and cumin in it, and it made it possible for people all over the country to make chili. So there was just an explosion of interest in chili con carne. Tamales were also huge. They were much bigger than hamburgers or hot dogs back at the turn of the century, in Chicago in particular. So the Midwest was just a hotbed of chili con carne, you know, right around the turn of that last century, the turn of the 20th century.
You, Rob, in the book give equal time to a lot of different regional variations of chili, but you're coming from a Tex-Mex tradition. If somebody said to you, Rob, I want to make, you know, a kind of Tex-Mex chili that those chili queens might have served up at the World's Fair, what are some of the keys that would have to be part of that?
Well, there's a recipe in the book for El Real Chili Con Carne. That was my Tex-Mex restaurant in Houston. COVID did us in, but we were around for about 10 years. And that chili starts with bacon. We cook bacon down, and we use that bacon as the grease that we cook the beef in. And then we make our own chili powder by pulverizing the anchos and grinding them up with the oregano and the cumin. Much bigger flavor than the stuff that's been in a bottle for a long time. But that's kind of purist chili, if you know what I mean. quite delicious. But really, I mean, chili has become pretty easy to make. There's some wonderful chili powders on the market from all different spice companies now. And basically, you know, if you use stew meat and you cut it up fine, that's really spectacular chili con carne. But, you know, ground meat, ground beef is fine too. And the slow cooker, the crock pot, has revolutionized chili because you want to brown the meat before you put it in the cooker, as you know, for food safety reasons, as well as to develop some of those wonderful Maillard reaction caramelized flavors. But if you brown the meat, put it in a crock pot with the chili powder and the liquids, let it go for 6 hours, 8 hours, you're going to have a wonderful dinner when you get home.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Rob Walsh, author of a bunch of books about food, including The Chili Cookbook. We're talking about great chili recipes, advice for making all manner of different kinds of chilies. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you thinking about chili this time of year? Do you have a favorite go-to? People have argued about what is and isn't chili over the year. Do you have a strong opinion when it comes to beans, no beans, tomatoes, no tomatoes, you name it? And hey, this is Wisconsin. I know some of you have made chili with venison. Love to hear your results at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Rob, you start off with some older school, you know, recipes that might have been how people made chili with venison in early Native American times. You've got a venison recipe. Can you talk about venison going into our chili?
It's a wonderful flavor, but you don't want to cook it quite as long because venison doesn't have a lot of fat in it. And leaner meats don't do well when they're cooked too long. Actually, the other thing that, you know, the Native Americans were cooking besides venison was turkey. I mean, turkey goes back to pre-Columbian times as well. And turkey chili is pretty fabulous. It's also, people swear by the healthiness of it. But when I put turkey chili out and beef chili out, a lot of people can't tell the difference, especially if you use the dark meat turkey. I had some wonderful chili experiences in Detroit eating Coney's and in Cincinnati, where it turns out that the Cincinnati chili is really a Greek dish, Macaronia Mikima, which Macedonian immigrants brought to Cincinnati. And since everybody was eating chili there, they just called their home dish chili. But they ate it at home on spaghetti. And so they brought this this Macaronia Mikima, macaroni being the spaghetti part, and the kima being sort of a Middle Eastern chili. And so their chili, while Texans find it, you know, a real head scratcher that people are putting chili on the spaghetti, it turns out that that is a very old, time-honored tradition as well. And I love the Cincinnati chili folk. And do you have any of their any of those Gold Star or any of those other chili chains up in Wisconsin?
I have not seen them, but I actually wanted to key in on something you mentioned there. I grew up in southeastern Michigan. I ate, in hindsight, probably a disturbing number of Coney dogs as a youth, with, you know, a hot dog with the Coney sauce, chili, mustard, and raw onions on it. If somebody wanted to recreate a favorite childhood memory, say, what is the key to making a good Detroit-style Coney sauce?
Well, I've got a recipe for Detroit Coney sauce in the chili cookbook. I've had complaints about it because people from Detroit write to me. And I said in the recipe that in Detroit, this is made from beef hearts. Mm-hmm. And I've changed the recipe to plain old ground meat, and I had people write and say it's better with the beef hearts. So, you know, that's my, I slipped up. I wasn't authentic, but.
Current Rob Ferret would probably prefer it your way. Back as a kid, I guess I didn't mind the beef hearts.
There's nothing wrong with them. I mean, I love awful dishes. It's great stuff. It's just, I mean, part of the reason I changed it was because it's kind of tough to go down to the neighborhood supermarket and get enough beef hearts to make a nice pot of chili. I mean, I guess you can find them, but they're not in the meat counter.
Rob Walsh is with us, award-winning food writer and author of a dozen books, including The Chili Cookbook. It's Food Friday. We're talking about chili of all makes and models, including tips on how to up our chili game, make maybe even a prize-winning pot that'll have your neighbors asking for the recipe. You could join the fun at 800-642-1234. Any chili fans out there, how do you make your chili stand out at maybe that potluck? Have you done a cook-off at some point? What's the strangest ingredient you've added to chili or encountered that really worked? Do you have questions about how to make chili? Any varieties from vegetarian to classic to, I don't know, venison? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite regional chili that you had? Maybe you're from a place with that chili or you've traveled. 800-642-1234 is the number, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday talk with award-winning food writer Rob Walsh. He's the author of The Chili Cookbook, among other things. And we are talking about chili, lots of great varieties and advice. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite variation on chili? San Antonio, Tex-Mex, Cincinnati style, Coney dogs, beans, no beans. What do you like to eat with your chili, or what do you like to put your chili on? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's bring on a caller now. Carol is with us in Oconomowoc. Carol, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. So first of all, I do make a really good chili, beans, no pasta. Chili has to have cumin, and I do use canned fresh garden tomatoes. So that's important. But the best meat that I've used is elk. It's hard to come by, but elk is a sweeter meat, and it just makes for an awesome chili.
Interesting. How often are you able to make your elk chili, Carol?
Obviously hunters are pretty around in Wisconsin, but whenever somebody gets elk, I always beg for a couple of pounds of of meat.
I hope they get some of the chili you make, right? If they're supplying the elk?
Of course.
Carol, thanks a lot for sharing that. First of all, Rob, chili with elk. I just checked the index. That didn't come up in the cookbook. Is that something you've encountered?
I have yet to enjoy elk chili, and I'm open to the experience. So anybody's got some elk chili they want to lay on me, I'm here.
Thanks for the call, Carol, at 800-642-1234. Rob, Carol also mentioned a key spice, cumin. I love cumin. I have multiple jars of cumin seed that I grind up for just about anything. Why is cumin such an important part of our chili?
Cumin is a very interesting and slightly controversial spice. Diana Kennedy, the great guru of Mexican food, said that Tex-Mex used way too much cumin, that you should only use a pinch of it in authentic Mexican food. As I looked into it, I realized that part of the reason Tex-Mex has a lot more cumin in it than Mexican food is because the early settlers of San Antonio, who were from the Canary Islands, Spain gave a land grant to people from the Canary Islands who would come over and populate the city of San Antonio, and they brought with them their traditions, which are a little more in the Arab Berber kind of strain, and their flavor signature was chilies, garlic, and cumin. And I mean, it's for that reason, Tex-Mex has a kind of a semblance and a connection to Arab food.
Interesting. Well, I'm glad the cumin came along with it because I'm a big fan. Let's go back to our callers now. Linda is with us in Milwaukee. Linda, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have an interesting ingredient for chili that I just love. It's dried tart cherries chopped, and it's so good. Well, you start out with chicken broth, and but the cherries in there give it this sort of interesting flavor, so I just wanted to add that to it.
Linda, thanks a lot for that. Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
That sounds great, Linda. And it's funny, I was going to mention that in the book there are some winning chili cook-off recipes, and one of them is called Bob Plager's $25,000 chili. He won a huge prize with this chili, and his secret ingredient is prunes. And he said prunes gave the color, the sweetness, and a sheen to the finished chili. Not far off of dried cherries. So good work there.
That's super interesting, Linda. And I wouldn't have, I got to say, I would not have thought of putting, I don't think, any kind of fruit in chili. Rob, have you experimented with other fruits to see if you can match that prune-based chili?
No, I can't say that I have. Probably a lapse in my imagination.
I'm right there with you.
I'm happy with lots of different kinds of chilies personally.
Thanks a lot for that call, Linda, at 800-642-1234. We're talking about chili on Food Friday with Rob Walsh, author of a whole bunch of books, including The Chili Cookbook. Still time for you to join in with your chili favorites or questions at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us now in Glendale. Tom, hello.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to share something and then offer what I'd like to do for my chili. And that's, for about 10 years, our company has actually had a chili cook-off for the employees. And it's a great hit. You get to try a lot of different people's idea on what the best chili is, and it's worked out. Get a little prizes at the end. It's one of the big things that we do for our business. But one of the chilies I like to bring to that event is I use cubed up a cube cut of steak that's got some fat in it, and then pork as well, and no tomatoes. Five different kinds of beans, and many people can't even tell that there's no tomatoes in the chili at all, and it's done well a couple of years.
Well, done well, Tom. Don't leave us hanging. Did you win?
Yeah. Well, first prize, actually.
Oh, you didn't want to brag.
First
cool.
prize.
Well, congratulations, Tom. Thanks a lot for sharing that. Okay, a lot there, Rob. One thing, he mentioned cubing up the steak, the beef in there. How do we make the decision between whether we cube it or pull it or use ground meat? What are the considerations there?
Well, in Texas, we have a grind called chili grind that you find in the meat case. It's basically ground meat, but with a half-inch die on the meat grinder. So if by any chance you're grinding your own meat, you'll find that at the shop, any shop where they sell meat grinders, along with those fine die that you can get to make the usual sort of ground meat, you can find I think it's a half inch die, and you put that on your meat grinder, and it grinds it in big chunks, which saves you the intensive labor of cutting all that meat up into little bits yourself. But if you do that, I think it was Wick Fowler, the famous chili maker, who said, cut the meat into pieces the size of the last joint of your little finger. So there's a tip.
Right. Interesting. And then five different beans in Tom's recipe. When we use beans in chili, what are some of the usual go-tos? Or do you like to experiment with a different mix of beans?
So, as I said, I had a Tex-Mex restaurant for many years. We made, gallons upon gallons of chili every day. We didn't put beans in it because in a Tex-Mex restaurant, the chili is sort of the mother sauce. I mean, you put chili on tamales, you put chili on, like you said, on hot dogs, you know, and you don't want beans in the chili if you're going to put it on a hot dog. I mean, you're from Michigan. I mean, am I speaking the truth here?
I did it once. I used canned chili with beans on a hot dog. It was weird. I regretted that decision.
Yeah, well, I mean, so the thing is, the chili sort of evolved into this one-pot meal for most people who make chili. They want to make a pot of chili and then put it in a bowl, and that's dinner. Which is great. That's fine. But, you know, if you're a Tex-Mex restaurant, you need the chili. You need to use the chili on the enchiladas. You need to use it on the tamales. You need to use it on all different things. Now, you know, you could get a bowl of chili and some beans and mix them together because they're both, you know, obviously there in a Tex-Mex restaurant. It's just that there's many other starches or, you know, other dishes that you want to use the chili for, and that's why you don't put beans in it, not because they don't taste good, but because it's more practical. The other thing is that most people should be aware of is if you're going to put beans in the chili, put them in the last half hour, especially, I mean, I'm talking about canned beans here. If you're using canned beans in chili, if you put them in at the beginning, they're just going to dissolve. They're going to turn to mush. If you want your beans to be intact, then you need to put them in towards the end.
Rob, we'll leave it there. Thanks for sharing this great advice with us.
Hey, it's been my pleasure.
That's Rob Walsh, award-winning food writer and author of a dozen books, including the relevant one today, The Chili Cookbook. He joined us for a Food Friday conversation about chili variations from around the country and around the world, and how you can take your own chili recipes to the next level. Still time for you to share your chili favorites over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@WPR.org, maybe with a recipe. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, a group of election experts has a 24-point plan to safeguard the voting process in 2024. A Wisconsin co-author joins the show for a look at those recommendations Monday morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network.